From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris. 8 years ago, when an experimental drug cocktail was first used to treat AIDS, it clearly saved lives. But the regimen was not easy for patients to follow. It required almost 24 pills and capsules a day, taken exactly on time, sometimes with food, sometimes without. Many researchers worried it was too complicated for people in developing countries, where tens of millions have HIV or AIDS. There's now a simpler program. Just a few pills are needed each day. But it's become clear that the challenge in treating AIDS in Africa is not culture, education, or a complicated regimen. It's money. NPR's Brenda Wilson went to Uganda, a country the Bush administration has singled out as a model in dealing with AIDS.
In 2001, there was a story making the rounds, one repeated by a Bush administration official. Africans didn't have a Western way of telling time. They used the sun. They wouldn't be able to take the anti-AIDS drugs as required at specific times of the day. So the University of California, San Francisco undertook a study. They wanted to see how well AIDS patients, like 37-year-old Karen Otaherwe, who lives about 45 minutes outside Kampala, comply with antiretroviral treatments.
At exactly 9:30 in the morning and 9:30 in the evening.
So how do you know when it's 9:30?
I just check on my clock.
Some of them have other means, research assistant Annette Kohoma says.
Some of our clients who have mobile phones, actually, they just time themselves on their mobile. So it just once, then it's time to take medicine. You find someone very busy, leaves whatever he's doing to take the medicine on time.
Kahuma and Joanna Crane, a graduate student of medical anthropology and an intern on the project, have been tracking their progress.
I work for a research study like this one in the U.S., where we do home visits. And people here take their pills more correctly than in America.
Really?
Yes.
So would you like to be interested in going with us for a home visit?
Yeah, sure.
It is a shame that it is only within the last 2 years that treatment is being addressed.
Dr. Peter Mujinyi is the director of the Joint Center for Clinical Research in Kampala and was seated just to the right of the First Lady when President Bush promised to create a $15 billion global AIDS initiative during the State of the Union address this year.
This comprehensive plan will prevent 7 million new AIDS infections, treat at least 2 million people with life-extending drugs, and provide humane care for millions of people suffering from AIDS and for children orphaned by AIDS.
If you go back 4-5 years ago, it was being said that treatment for Africa, for the huge populations already infected by HIV, was just impossible.
Again, Dr. Peter Mujinyi.
I have never accepted that Africa would not be able to handle antiretrovirals. And that's why me and my colleagues have been giving antiretrovirals literally as they have been coming out. Although, in fact, because we had no resources whatsoever, it was being accessed by only those who could pay for them.
Mujinyi says that out of the 250,000 people with AIDS in Uganda who need treatment now, only 20,000 or so are getting the drugs. Some are part of clinical research projects. About 9,000 patients buy the medicines from the center. The University of California has been following 69 of those patients. Annette Kahuma and Johanna Crane have come to check on a patient in Kasanga, a township on the outskirts of Kampala. Earlier, they stopped by unannounced at the apartment of a patient who was not at home.
The idea is not to make people change their pill taking because they expect you at a certain time or a certain day. So we'll wait for you here.
Kahuma picks her way in the dark, past parked cars and fenced-in barking dogs, to the one-room brick hut of a 40-year-old policeman. Inside, a tall, slender man sits beside a whirring fan. His shirt hangs open and there's a towel, sarong wrapped around his waist. The night air is cool, and yet the man is sweating. Tiny rivulets circle his waist and drip from his face and chest.
So Mr. Wynne have come for the visit, as always.
Kahuma asks him for his bottle of antiretrovirals, Triomune, a drug cocktail that combines a protease inhibitor and two other antiretrovirals all in one pill.
We make the pill counts and then start interviewing them on how they are taking their medications later.
She counts the pills to see how many are left since his last prescription was filled. The date on the bottle cap changes whenever it's opened.
Are you still taking your medicine well?
Yes.
She asks if he is sharing pills with family or neighbors.
Yesterday.
He says no. The questions continue.
Yesterday was Monday. How many doses of Triomine did you take yesterday?
Two.
Okay. And how many times did you open that pill bottle?
Two times.
Now think about the day before yesterday, which was Sunday. How many doses of Triomine did you take?
I've been going on to two every day. Apart from, was it on 29th? Mm-hmm. I had the terrible fever which was making me vomit every now and then. So in the evening, after taking the last dose, I had to vomit everything back.
Apart from the pill he couldn't keep down, he tells Kahuma he hasn't missed a single dose. This is consistent with what studies have shown throughout the developing world. In countries like Senegal and South Africa, there have been levels of compliance similar to what Dr. David Bangsberg, the director of the University of California San Francisco study, is finding in Uganda, where nearly all of the patients faithfully take their medicine.
I think it's safe to say that there is a high value placed on therapy here. People sacrifice in order to purchase therapy. They have many HIV-infected people in their family who have died of AIDS. HIV treatment has value, which probably is special here and more special than it might be in North America, where HIV therapy is plentiful.
Though some might debate just how plentiful HIV therapy is in the United States, Bangsberg's essential point is that compliance is not the main obstacle to treatment, never has been. The barrier for the overwhelming majority of people in developing countries is what it's always been, cost.
And we're not talking about much money. We're talking about a dollar a day.
So Bangsberg has started the Family Treatment Fund to take advantage of drops in prices of generic drugs that are as low as 35 cents a day.
Frankly, it became obvious to us it's easier to raise money to do research on people than it was to come up with funds to actually give people therapy. And we felt an obligation to raise a separate pot of money, which was simply devoted to providing therapy. $100,000 of research doesn't go very far. $100,000 of low-cost generic therapy goes a long ways.
In the one instance where the project has stepped in to pay for a patient's medicine, it becomes clear that the absence of money complicates things in more ways than one. Remember Karen Otoherwe? She had done very well at the beginning of the project, when she earned a salary that was unusually high in Uganda, 200,000 shillings a month. That's about $100. She could afford the AIDS drugs. That changed in January, when the woman she worked for learned that Otoherwe had AIDS after she was in the hospital for 2 weeks.
I was working as a housemaid, and then the woman started mistreating me that I can't work anymore because I'm sick.
Is it because it took you a while to sort of get your energy back?
No, she thought that maybe her children or themselves, they will get infected also. Mm-hmm. But then the husband told her that she can't affect us.
For a few months, the employer allowed Otoherwe to stay on, until she had paid back the money she owed them for taking care of the hospital bill.
Like 150,000, she could leave her with 40,000.
40,000.
They left you with 40,000.
Yes.
So how did you manage that?
I could struggle. And I couldn't get enough food. As you know, this medicine, I have to eat enough food. But still, she didn't like me to be around.
So the program gives you the medicine?
Yes.
And what do you do for rent?
At the moment, I don't have any because, you know, I paid this house as soon as I left the job. So I paid 3 months before. But now I don't have money to eat.
Karen Otaherere, like many patients with AIDS in developing countries, now lives with the hope that her life is about to change because of the generosity of the American people that President Bush has talked about so much. Dr. Peter Mugenyi says the Joint Center for Clinical Research is bombarded with phone calls from people every time there's one of these announcements, from President Bush, the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, Tuberculosis, and Malaria, President Clinton's Foundation. Mugenyi understands bureaucracy, but he does wonder why everyone talks of an emergency, but insists on starting slow and then building up.
It's a crisis. They should, in fact, think of starting with a big bang and then slow down as they get on top of the crisis. This is the logical way to deal with it. But as a general principle, the crisis is already huge. 5.5 million people infected in South Africa. You need to start in a big way.
Countries like South Africa, Senegal, and Uganda, he says, have been ready for years to absorb the vast sums of money that would enable them to get medicine to the hundreds of thousands who are dying while they wait. So far, only a few thousand people more in Uganda are being treated this year, which means that Annette Kahuma and Johanna Crane will have to continue to watch patients struggle to stay on the medicine as their resources dwindle.
Emotionally, yeah, we become so upset. Yeah. Like you find a person very willing to take well the medications, but then when that person can't afford or keeps on missing right. because she doesn't have money to buy the medicine, you know.
Right. Even with Karen, she has the medication now, but she can't buy food or pay rent.
It hurts.
Brenda Wilson, NPR News.